welcome to this episode of my podcast series. My name is Karen DeLeon, and today I am here with Professor Bruce McAdams. Bruce has been a faculty member at the University of Guelph in the School of Hospitality, Food, and Tourism Management for 8 years, since leaving the industry after 20 years in management roles. His experience is heavily based in the restaurant industry, most notably as the VP of Operations for a Toronto-based fine dining company. Since joining Guelph, his research has delved into approaching a triple bottom line approach in restaurants. Welcome, Bruce.
Why, thank you, Karen.
Today, we're just going to talk about your experience in the industry and kind of your perspective as an educator and as someone who has been in management roles in the industry. So that's kind of how we're going to look at today.
Sounds good. I think I can do that. But before we do that, I'm going to give you some props, and I want it to be in the public domain. And I want to say thank you, Karen, for being our intern at UGCERP this year. You've done a great job. We're really proud of you, and you're going to kill it when you're in industry. So that's on the record now. So well done.
Thank you, Bruce. So just to get started, looking back at when you graduated from the program, do you remember what expectations you and your peers had about going into the industry?
It's a long time ago. That's 30 years. You weren't born then, were you?
No, I was not.
Okay. Well, the biggest difference between now and then is the internet, obviously. We had very little information compared to you. If you want to sort of look at a comparison, you today have job fairs, alumni nights, the internet again, you're doing co-ops. None of that existed 30 years ago. So we had our summer jobs to draw on as far as experience. And then we had professors telling us we should go to the interviews for what were called management trainee programs then, not leadership development, which you would hear more today. And so we would interview these companies. They would come on campus the last month or two before graduation, and you'd sign up for an interview on a piece of paper.
That's how it went.
That's how it went, really, like you would. And they were the big companies, Sheraton, Four Seasons, Darden, Cara, all the companies. And I interviewed with both restaurant and hotels. And the expectation, I guess, was to get one of those jobs. That's what everyone was trying to do. It was competitive.
The big
trying, you're trying to get that trainee to learn more. And then the expectation was you work hard in that company and you'll move up the ladder.
Yeah.
And so it's still the same.
It's kind of pretty similar, I think it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
Whenever those programs come up, whenever we're talking to employers, like that's still what they're kind of promoting to us.
Yep.
So clearly 30 years later, it's still the same kind of
mindset. Might have a different acronym and a different, it's called something different. But you guys seriously, sometimes I think you know too much almost. Because I look back and I don't think when we were graduating, we were worried about just getting a job. You guys know so much, you're thinking a couple steps ahead almost. You're thinking more about your career and where it's going to take you. And we weren't that advanced back then.
Just trying to find the next step.
You got it.
We're thinking 5 steps ahead. Do you think there's something unique about the hospitality industry that makes it attractive to students?
It's people. I really think so. And if you look around your classmates, we're people.
Yes.
And we like people. We like to interact. We're social. And I also think there's an energy dynamic that's part of it. You know, hotels, restaurants, traveling is fluid. It's dynamic. It's moving. There's lots of moving parts and bells and whistles. And so I think we get attracted to that. And I don't think that's a bad thing. The one thing sometimes we can do is occasionally I'll get a student in my office saying, you know, professor, you know, I'm a student in tourism in fourth year and I don't know what I'm going to do now. And I'll say, well, why did you take tourism? And they'll say, well, I like to travel. And it's like, well, I like to eat in restaurants, but that's not why I went into the restaurant business, because you're on the other end, you're serving. So sometimes you have to sort of make sure that when students are coming in, that they're not coming in because they like to eat in restaurants or go to hotels or travel. It's like you like to be like on the serving end, the business side. Right. You got it.
Do you think as we stay in the industry, do you think it's still the business side that we, do we fall in more in love with it, or do you think?
I think it's all, oh my God, I gotta be careful what I say here. It's like any relationship. Your relationship with your career is you go through phases.
Yeah.
When some things are really exciting and you're looking forward to it every day, and then maybe a few years later, it's like, okay, this is a bit of the same.
Yeah. I think that's a fair analysis.
And you evolve. Yeah. You look at, you love different things. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I think if I look back to my 25 years, people were still at the base of everything.
Yeah.
But other things came and went, you know, love of creating menus or doing food or training programs or opening restaurants or opening a hotel, things like that came and went, were different challenges, but at the root of it, it's all about people.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really good way of putting it. I think you also go through it and you work through it when you face an issue and then you work through that problem.
Absolutely. It's good to hear you say that. You're gonna be fine out there.
Hopefully. We'll see. Do you think there's really a difference between students with a degree or those who just happen to have a lot of experience in the industry?
All right, so that I think is a good question. And it is something I reflect on quite a bit and end up speaking about. So let's say you didn't go to Guelph and take a 4-year degree program.
Okay.
And at 18, you just went and worked.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at that Karen versus the Karen that has gone out and taken a degree, I think at 22, you're probably equal and the same. And the Karen that didn't go to university might even be a little bit farther ahead in the early stages because you have more experience. You've just handled a lot more things at a supervisory level, etc. Where I find the degree kicked in for me and from what I hear from colleagues is sort of after year 5 of graduation.
Oh, really?
And onward. I found myself using what I learned in my degree after the first 5 years. That's when really I felt I had an advantage over people that maybe didn't have a degree because the strategy, all of a sudden you're not just solving day-to-day issues, you're creating strategy, your ability to make bigger decisions or you're put in positions of bigger decisions. And that's when I found myself saying, I'm glad I went to Guelph and take a degree because all those courses that you slept through or you tried to fight sleeping through at the back of class, the economics and the finance and the accounting and learning about balance sheets, etc. It does come in handy, but
eventually.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
Good to hear. I'm sure all
money
the
well
other...
spent.
I'm sure all the other students will like to hear that too. I was actually talking to Rebecca Gordon, who's a previous student of yours, and she's 2 or 3 years out now. And I think it'd be great for her to hear that as well as a recent grad. Knowing that even though she's in a management role, that her education still matters, even like later on.
It does, and sometimes it just takes a while to use those things. But you know, if you're still in it 5 years from now or 10 years, you'll find that looking back, that I was like, God, I'm glad I took that course.
I'm glad. So last week, as I've mentioned, Rebecca was here. So who is a student of yours? And she actually was the previous excerpt intern.
Mm-hmm.
So she mentioned in her interview that the restaurant industry is an old school business.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, boy. Okay. So I'm warning you, Karen, and listeners that I may go off on a tangent here.
That's okay.
But it is old school. It's, you know, and I'm going to speak mostly to restaurants.
Okay.
It is an old model. It's pretty much the same today as it was when I graduated 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when I mean that, it's management structure, it's compensation, it's expectations for hours worked, it's job design. Those things really haven't evolved a heck of a lot. And if you think about it, you know, 30 years ago, if I wanted money, I had to go to a bank and line up and see a teller to get money.
And not go to the machine?
And not go to the machine. And if I wanted to pay a bill, I had to go to the place to pay the bill.
Oh.
Or go to a mailbox. And And, you know, the world has changed incredibly in 30 years. And one of the things I'm concerned about is our business model and the way we run restaurants really hasn't evolved. And that is, you know me. I love to question and challenge that model. So I think Rebecca's, she's an incredibly bright woman, and I think she's hit on something there because it is an issue, and it is an issue that's holding our industry back. And I think it's at the root of many of the issues that I have a feeling we're going to talk about as this podcast evolves.
I think so too.
And it's time for change, and we really do need to reflect on it and look at the way we do things.
So with that being said, how have you seen the industry's culture change in the last 8 or 9 years? Do you think it's kind of changed for the better?
Okay, so you've sat in class with me, and you know culture is a big thing.
Yes.
And I always say culture will eat strategy for breakfast and organizations. And when you're speaking about an industry culture, that's even a bigger monster to try to understand.
Yeah.
So let me say this. I think there has been some evolution in culture, in how we run our business, but I think it's been based on society has changed, and so the industry has had to change with it. So, and I'll give you an example of 25 years ago when I was starting off, there was probably more harassment in the workplace than there is now. Bullying, harassment, things that today we've come to know are unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it still does exist today, it exists less than it did in my day. That is not, industry hasn't corrected that. That is society that's corrected that. So we have somewhat evolved at the pace of society. And I think our culture needs to be taken to the next level. Things like work hours and expectations for young people in the industry, that really hasn't evolved. we're changing, but it's slow.
Slow.
Yeah.
Slow progress.
You got it.
Do you think in that kind of culture, there's a sort of generation gap between those entering the industry now and for those who are in management roles? And do you think their expectations align or misalign?
Again, another good question. There is a generation gap. I would argue, though, there's always a generation gap. When I was 20 going in, there was 50-year-olds that were a generation ahead of me and had different values and different ideas and perspectives. Just like your generation will have different ideas and values than my generation did ahead. What ends up happening, though, are the people that are really, well, there's two types of people driving the industry. There is a lot of middle-aged white men.
Yes.
You just have to go to a restaurant conference, and that's what
and
you see.
And you'll see all of them.
Right. And, you know, and I was one of them, right? And that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's very unfortunate, and it's an issue in our industry that, again, hasn't changed in 30 years that I've been in it, and is one we have to address. Where you do see a lot of innovation and change is in sort of the independent side, more so than in the corporate side
of
restaurants. Smaller restaurants. You see a lot of, you see a lot of innovation, young people doing things. And I'm actually going to call our industry out a little in Canada and say that we're not evolving as quick as our partners to the south of the border. And if you look to the people that are really driving change in the U.S. restaurant scene, it's Dominique Crenn, it's Amanda Cohen, it's Danny Meyer.
Yeah.
These are, and two of those three are women.
Yes.
Amen. now they're chefs, but they're business owners, and Amanda Cohen has really shaken up the whole idea of how we pay people.
Yeah, okay.
So front of house, back house, make the same. There's no tips, and she's very proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
Dominique Crenn in San Francisco with Petite Crenn, her restaurant, is really looked at the role of jobs and
she's
how
the one
work
who
is
does,
divided.
Everyone does everything,
yeah,
right?
Okay. Yeah, so she's got this model, and there's a few restaurants out in California that are doing this where, you know, people, there's not this segregation between the front and back. You can do both, or, you know, you might have your cook seat you if they're not busy in the kitchen. It's 12 o'clock and you might find that your host is actually one of the chefs, and then a chef's opening a bottle of wine or running food to the table. Mm-hmm. And then these people are looking at how work is designed differently. And Danny Meyer, of course, and I'm sure we'll get into this, is, you know, brought servant leadership to restaurants.
Yes.
And
yes,
I know that's near and dear to your heart. So these are all things again that are happening in the States. And now they have 10 times the amount of restaurants that we do.
Yeah.
So there's a better chance of innovation there. But I'd like to see and there are people, you know, I don't want people to get me wrong, there are people doing really cool things
in Canada,
but not to the extent that we need to. So
maybe eventually, slow progress.
Maybe you're going to be the
maybe.
Yeah,
maybe it'll be
I
me.
I think so.
Maybe it'll be one of my classmates. Just going back to the education now, very quickly, do you think there's any progress in hospitality education that makes students more prepared now than 30 years ago, or do you think it's still kind of the same?
Don't ask me any questions that'll get me in trouble. I really question what we're doing, and I will tell you that I think we do a good job of teaching people the old model. And we were just talking about this old model.
Yes.
And so I really think we're teaching people and the old business model and the old way of doing things, and we're not allowing them to create, innovate, and think of new ideas. I don't think there's enough creativity and license for students to challenge and to change. And again, I think it's representative of the industry, where, you know, you get people like me that have been in the industry, or then they go to colleges or universities and teach, and we teach what we knew. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Yeah. As opposed to
What's happening now. Yeah.
And I think that's a really, I don't know if this is unique to hospitality. My guess is probably other businesses have the same issue.
Yeah.
But you know, again, I think it's just creating this entrenched business model that we really need to shake up.
I don't know. As a student, I feel like we are prepared to go.
You are. Yeah,
we're prepared to go. And because it still is part of the old business model, even though we're learning it, I think there are professors like you who are still teaching us how to go about it in a different way, so that when we're prepared, we are prepared for the old business model, but also ready to tackle on something new and try to introduce something.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, so it's stuff like that that I think maybe we're going to be the generation that hopefully fixes that.
And that's a hard thing, because we couldn't just teach you to be a new business model and then send you into the old business
model. Yeah, exactly.
That probably wouldn't work.
So. No, we would be screwed.
Yeah. It's like, oh, she lasted a week at that job.
Exactly. I don't think that would work. But I think that by teaching us the old stuff, but also introducing the new stuff to us, like, we're prepared for both.
Yeah.
And I think that's really good.
Well, and again, I'll tell you, if there was, and I'm getting off topic, Karen,
that's okay.
But you know me, if there was a discipline that I would incorporate into every curriculum in hospitality, it would be change management and understanding how to manage change.
Mm-hmm.
And we get little doses, I think, at Guelph. We give you a few things here and there, but really you are in a time on this planet where change is increasing every day. And, and you need to know how to manage change.
Yeah.
And so that would be...
And being able to adapt to it. Yeah.
All that being said, I think as well, and I'm going to pat us on the back as an industry, I think we do a good job. We just need to reflect on how we can do better.
Yes. It's always an ongoing thing. So, kind of big question here.
Mm-hmm.
Whose responsibility is it to make those changes to the current working conditions in the industry? So it's clearly been an issue for some time now. So things like turnover, working conditions, or low pay. Is it up to the young managers entering the industry, or is it the industry itself that needs those changes to happen?
Okay, so I think you guys being graduates and recent graduates are mm-hmm. doing your part, and I want you to try to grasp this, and you're doing your part by leaving the industry sometimes.
Okay.
And this is, you know, graduate does 4 years, they go out, they work 2 years, it's not a satisfying, attractive, it's not what they expected,
yeah.
and they leave.
Yeah.
That's a message to industry that young person is saying, and the message is, you're not providing me with what I need
mm-hmm.
For a career in your industry. So, and I will tell you that has been the same since my day. There are very few people in my graduating class that lasted more than 5 years in hospitality.
Okay.
So this is not new. So it is an industry issue. And I think it's rooted in this idea of not understanding and being conscious that quality employees, whether they're managers or staff members, are key to profitability.
Mm-hmm.
There is a direct relationship between the quality of the people in your restaurant and your profitability. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
If you have a really great general manager,
yeah.
they can manage costs.
Mm-hmm.
They can execute to make sure food is hot and guests are happy. And people that work there won't leave, because you know the number one reason why people leave their job is because of their supervisor,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Those are all things that are linked to profitability. We don't look at people as assets, and we don't look at the value that is created by great people in our industry. And so they leave or they move on, and we've accepted that happens. So I listen to many people in our industry say, if I can get 2 years out of a manager, we're thrilled.
That's great.
Yeah. And that, does that sound like a good
no,
business strategy
but
too?
It's a question I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I've personally been asked.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not surprising, but it's kind of just not, it's not good.
No, but we accept it. We're like,
yeah.
yeah, you know what? We if we can get 2 years out of a person, that's good. Well, when that person leaves, and let's say they're manager, then there's a new one that comes in. And with that, things change.
Yeah.
Performance isn't great right off the bat. And all these things happen. And we spend so much money on our brand, you know?
yeah.
And we spend so much money, you know, money on design. And we really, and I don't want this to go the wrong way. We treat our guests like precious commodities. They're, and we should. But I think part of it is we treat our guests well and better than our staff and our people mm-hmm. that work in the industry. And if you know that servant model leadership, and I'll probably ask you this, if you take care of your, if you as a business leader serve your staff and take care of them, they'll take care of your customers, which take
yep.
care of the bottom line. And what is that model called?
The servant leadership approach?
Yes, servant
yeah.
leadership, right? So you've been paying attention. Right?
I learned from you.
So you know, I think, and I can go back to my last few years in business where I had made many mistakes, but I did, you know, and it wasn't always easy, but I did start realizing near the end the value of human capital and looking at at great employees as gold, and and saying there's we can't lose these people, because there is a direct relationship between the quality of people in your restaurant and your profitability, and we have to, in our busy day, we have to wake up and realize that that relationship is, in my eyes, the number one link to profitability. And it's not a fuzzy HR issue.
No.
And a lot of times we think, oh, you know, it, fuzzy HR issue.
Yeah.
Right? But it, but it's about business. It's about making money or being profitable. So I think that's, and I think when industry, all of us in industry, including us in education, myself, when we start realizing the value that of people and that our employers, our employees are a product and they're key to our financial success and quality people.
I think that's something that everyone needs to understand, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone on all levels. So I think that's one of the things that needs to kind of be incorporated. And it's something we're learning, of course, in school.
Yeah. And then you go out into the real world, right? And it's and again, it's different. It's different in a classroom and different in the real world.
Definitely.
And you've already experienced that.
Yeah.
You have some good experience. So, you know, why do you see that? Have you noticed in your career so far and in your jobs that we often don't value quality people enough? Or?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, in the different companies that I've worked for, they kind of differ, but I can see where in smaller companies, they value the people way more, just because they have developed that relationship and those types of connections. But in a bigger company, it's difficult for upper management to do it, so they let their supervisors do it, but supervisors kind of get in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's hard for them to balance the upper management and
the more layers.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where the difficulty comes from, that there's so many layers that, and I guess the idea isn't the same on all levels. And I think that's where that needs to change.
It's interesting your perspective on that, and you know, I can see some videos of some of these people I've mentioned, like Danny Meyer and Dominique Krenn and Amanda Cohen. And one of the things that, you know, whether it's videos of them speaking or their Instagram accounts is ever present is them side by side with their employees and working side by side, celebrating side by side, just doing things together and this continuous relationship and, you know, in Danny's case, he's got a couple levels in his company, but he's still
there.
He's still walking around, you know, talking to people, and they know him, and he knows them, and that's still at the heart of everything they do.
Which is why they're there.
Yeah, yeah, arguably the most successful restaurateur in the U.S., in North America, you know, Danny Meyer, and really, it all comes down to his approach of servant leadership. Right?
Absolutely.
So I think we have to. I think we have to keep working on that one.
I agree.
All right, what's next?
Right. So, a compressed work week is something that's been considered for the industry to adapt. So maybe 10 hours a day, 4 days a week, or 8 hours instead of the 8 hour days, 5 days a week. Why do you think more restaurants don't adapt to this concept?
Okay, so near and dear to my heart again, you're talking to Rebecca. We've had this conversation.
Yes, I was talking to Rebecca.
Yes. Okay, so realistically, have you worked an 8 hour day in management in hospitality?
Good Lord, no.
No. So right off the top, you know, you have to change that to sort of 5 10 hour days.
Yes.
Or 5 12 hour days. So and I don't think that's a bad thing, and I'm gonna get back to your generation and my generation, how sometimes we slight you guys by saying you don't want to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
Not true. You work as hard as any generation. You just don't want, you want your time to yourself as well.
Yes.
And you want your life.
Yeah.
So compressed work schedules saved nursing and firefighting and policing, you know, 20, 30 years ago when there was huge turnover in those fields.
Yeah.
Because people were working 5, 12 hour shifts.
It was stressful. Burnout.
Yeah, and it was burnout.
Yeah.
So they moved to 3 days on, 3 days off, 3 days, 4 days, compressed work schedules, and now their turnover is lower, retention is higher, and satisfaction and all those things, and it's really helped that industry. So why wouldn't we do it? That is the million-dollar question, because let me ask you, as a graduating student, would you rather work 5 10-hour shifts and have 2 days off, or work 4 12-hour shifts and have 3 days off?
Oh, I'd rather work 4 12-hour shifts and have 3 days off.
And what about if I said that you could work 4 days a week, have 12 hours, and 1 month a year you would have a sabbatical to go and travel?
Absolutely.
Would that be attractive to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So why don't we do that?
We should ask everyone else.
So send in your emails to ugsurf.com. No, here's why it doesn't happen. And it goes back to that, the old model, the old way of doing things. You know, back in my day, we did it this way. And also, you know, no one willing to take that chance.
Yeah.
Because when you look at it, it's different.
Yes.
And right away, people are thinking, well, that's going to cost me more.
Yeah.
Because I won't have a manager there for a day. So I'm going to have another manager. So we associate it again with cost. But what some of the research shows in those compressed work schedules is there's an increase in productivity.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell you that if you usually have two managers working on a shift and you offer them an extra day, they'd be saying, I can run a shift by myself.
Right.
And my productivity to get an extra day off, correct?
Will absolutely increase.
Yeah. So all these things, you know, are possible solutions. And you do hear of companies, small and large, occasionally testing them and doing them. But it amazes me. It amazes me that we're not doing more of that. And I, you know, the more I study this, the more I think that that is part of the answer. And you know, I had a very dear friend of mine. I've had this conversation. He's a mentor of mine for you know, 20 years, 15 years. And he says, well, you know, we're 24/7 business.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, we are open. Hotels and restaurants are open weekends and nights and stuff, but it doesn't mean you have to be there and
all the time. Yeah.
And that's an issue. And I think it's more of an issue than compensation for young people. And, you know, anecdotally, I have you guys in class. I ask you the question, would you rather make more money or more time off? And you guys always say more time off. Yep.
Yeah, I think we'd always rather work a little bit longer to have that extra day.
Absolutely. And hard work is not, my God, I see you guys work so hard. And you know, someone like you who's on council and doing papers and working and things like that, there's it's not for... It's not a work ethic thing. It's not for not being scared to work.
I think it's interesting when you say people are kind of scared about it. I think it's because it's unconventional that people are too scared to adapt that model.
Yeah.
And because it's unconventional, there's like a society thing that's just saying it's not right because it's unconventional. And I think that's wrong.
And I think you're right. and you're very perceptive to say that. And what's happened again is this is an old model that it's always been this way.
Yeah.
And the people at the top, many of them have always done it this way. And part of the model is that we haven't been innovative. That it's you know, some businesses and industries, innovation is built into their model. So they're continuously changing.
Yeah.
Where innovation is built into our model is with food and menu items. It's amazing how we've evolved from a food and culinary side,
mm-hmm.
yet our management practices have, again, stayed with us, you know, 30 years.
Yeah.
So 30 years ago, fine dining was a steak and Caesar salad.
Yes.
When I graduated. And we had the same management structure. Now you're not eating steak and Caesar salad, but we still have the same management structure. So
That's interesting.
Good.
I think you kind of touched on this one. But one study found that students who've studied hospitality end up leaving the industry after 3 or 4 years, some as soon as like 1 year after graduation, and it's because of burnout or working conditions, or because they just feel like they're not being compensated for their efforts. So in your perspective, how has the industry really dealt with the problem in the last few years? Mm. Because it's not really a new problem, or what more could they be doing for that?
Okay, so it's not a new problem. And again, it isn't something we really have addressed. And here's the thing is we need young people, and they come into our industry as part-time workers, mm-hmm. and they don't get breaks. And if they're in the kitchen, we don't pay them enough. And they don't get the attention they deserve. And so they have a less than great experience. There are so many parties I've been to when people say, oh, what do you do? And I would say, oh, I'm in the restaurant business. Oh, I worked, my first job was in the restaurant industry. And in fact, our association, the Restaurant Association talks about how 50% of people have their first job in the industry. You know, so, well, that's great. Imagine if they actually liked it and stayed. And then we wouldn't have a problem we have now, where we don't have enough people. They go in and then they don't consider it as a career. So, first of all, people entering the industry should be treated with dignity, respect, and looked at as people that could be working in our industry for 40 years. And we just don't do that.
Yeah.
And many of these, jobs are in sectors that are, low paying, hard work, with very little reward. I don't know if we can change that. What we can change is people like yourself and that are the thousands of students in Ontario that are going to culinary school and hospitality programs like this, where they want to be a professional. And if we can keep more of those people, then I think they will be the key to treating new people coming in mm-hmm. better and having a more open approach and a people-centric approach. And so it's a long process. And that study is one I've seen, and it's heartbreaking. I tweeted out last week in one of my classes, you weren't in it, but I had a student say, I always wanted to be a restaurant general manager until I did my co-op. Mm-hmm. And I saw the life of my restaurant general manager, and I said, whoa, I don't want that
no.
life. The quality of life. And unfortunately, we've talked about that in our course in co-op, is that is not uncommon. We got a long way.
Hopefully it's going that way.
Yep, I hope so.
Okay, so just to kind of end this off, we're going to play a really quick game.
Oh, I knew this was
coming. Of rapid fire. I'm going to give you two scenarios, and you're just going to choose one very, very quickly. And they're not really just about like you as an educator. It's kind of just like your experience or maybe when you were working or what you would have liked more when you were in the restaurant industry.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
Yes.
Opening shift or closing shift?
Opening. I'm a morning person.
Tipping or no tipping?
Oh, what do you think?
Undisclosed.
No tipping is absolutely 100%.
Split shifts or be on call?
Ooh, neither.
Right.
Well, seriously, like neither of them are good. No. Right. So how can we change that? Right. Because that again has been so
part of the norm.
Can I pass on that and say yeah?
Compressed work week or longer hours? I don't know.
I would go for the compressed.
Yeah.
Working fewer days and longer hours. In fact, I would love to work a 2-day work week, working 12 hours a day.
I think all of us would.
Yeah.
If when you're working, would you rather order off the menu or would you rather bring your own lunch?
When I'm working?
Yeah.
You know what? bring my own lunch.
Really?
Yeah, and but only if I have the ability to make a good lunch.
Okay.
And that all
goes with the whole working thing.
It goes with the whole work thing, where if I have that day off where I can make my homemade lasagna,
yeah,
and freeze it in the freezer
and have it prepped
and bring it to work, yep, because I've made it and I've rolled out the pasta and I've made the sauce from scratch, then I want that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Like
that, and I think that's where, you know, we have to go. Peter Oliver, who you know,
yes,
I had the pleasure of working with Peter and for him for 13 years, used to tell a story about one of his chefs. And the chef, after lunch service, would go up to his office and put a napkin on a table and have a glass, half glass of wine, yeah, and make a fresh meal for himself and sit down.
And eat.
And eat and put a napkin in and use a knife and fork. Huh. And would say, no work right now. This, yeah, is my meal time. This is what I need. And I'd always, you know, we would talk about that as you know, because you know, as managers, we eat on the run.
Yeah. We eat on the run.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not good, you know, because we're training you to do that in the real world, right? So
yeah,
that you have your phone in one hand and your wrap in the other hand.
Yeah, and we're
right?
going or, and, yeah, yeah, all the so, time.
Yeah, no.
Better working conditions or a higher paycheck?
Better working conditions.
Smoke breaks, or would you rather leave early?
Well, I don't smoke. I'd rather leave early.
A 10% pay cut or a 2-week vacation?
2-week vacation.
And when you were working, would you rather have a promotion to management or a pay raise?
Promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know what? Probably... Go back to, what was the question 2 ago about?
Smoke breaks?
No, the one after smoke breaks.
The 10% pay cut or the 2-week vacation?
So when I was working, I would probably take money,
yeah,
over time, but now I've realized the value of time. And again, that goes back, your generation understands.
Time.
Time is the, yeah, most important thing. I've learned that in the same last 10 years as, yeah, you, so that's changed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So from when you were entering the industry, I guess, or working in it?
Yeah. I would have taken...
The pay.
The money. Yeah, the money. If I think back, I probably would have. And hey, I had, you know, my first job, it was 2 weeks vacation a year for the first 5 years. And for the first 2-3 years, 6 days a week. Okay. Yeah. And when I worked in fine dining... which was even in the 2000s, you know, it was not uncommon for salaried chefs and managers to work to be scheduled 6 days a week.
No,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and you think of it now, and really it's just not a sustainable practice. And again, it leads to turnover of good people, which leads to quality issues and, mm-hmm, working condition issues, and it's this big
and the same problems,
yeah,
over and over
you
again.
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that kind of ends.
No.
The rapid fire.
Oh, I'm having fun.
But just like a last bit, so do you have any advice for the soon-to-be grads? And do you think we need to kind of brace ourselves for a little bit more than we're currently expecting?
I think you're prepared. I think I mentioned earlier that you might even have too much.
Yeah.
You're over-prepared, mm-hmm, and you think too much as a generation, not you specifically. But I think that maybe if you knew a little bit less and it wouldn't be such a bad thing.
It'd be a little bit more of a learning.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is always okay.
It is always, yeah, okay to learn. Here's the thing I say to some students is... After graduation, look at your first couple of years as a continuance of your education. And you know, maybe even think of doing a few different things and experimenting a bit. And, you know, often we have a goal and we're working towards one job and we land that job because we've worked so hard,
yeah,
for it. And then I'll get a student that's done that, and 2 years later they come to me and say, I hate my job, and you know, and I'm like, why did you stay? Well, I worked towards that goal, and then I got it, and I realized it really wasn't what I wanted, but I worked so hard that I felt like I, so, you know, and people, if anyone from industry is listening to this, they probably don't want to hear me saying this, but I'm giving advice to students is, you know, don't be scared to try a few different things. Always be honest with employers, of course. And the other thing that graduates can sometimes, I think, misunderstand is that when university ends, the learning is truly just beginning. And you have to not stop learning.
Yeah.
And you can't put down books and stop reading and thinking. And because you'll just get into that old business model, the accepting
the
of
cycle.
Things, the cycle,
yeah.
And you'll be part of that, and it'll be like a hamster cage, and you'll just be, you know, and you have to challenge yourself, and you have to think, and you have to reflect, and you have to build all those things into your routine, because we get into these work routines, and we've talked about this in co-op about building reflection into your routine somehow, whatever it is, whether it's meditation, whether it's going, for me, you know, it's walking my dog.
Yeah.
That's my reflection time. But it's built into my day every morning and every night. And I got to walk them, you know, 2 half-hour walks, and it allows me to reflect on my day, plan my next day, and mm-hmm. think about bigger picture things. And that reflection is key. So, you know, those are the things I think I would say.
Tell us.
But, yeah.
And I think we've taken that from you as well. I think it's something that we've all even thought about doing and still try to do it now. But, I mean, it's the last week of classes.
And there are times when you're – and, like, when I'm marking papers, my dog might only get one walk a day
You get busy. But there's always trying to find that time for ourselves is, I think, something that we all do need to learn. And I think during school, that's something we sometimes forget is to make time for ourselves.
Well, and if you think about it, you know, and we sort of, you know, 5 minutes ago when we were talking about this, we sort of were joking about it, but we are almost training you to be prepared for this always be connected, you know, always be working, and because we expect so much of you, we give so many opportunities to you, like you, you know, you are one of those people that in this program who have taken advantage of everything,
mm-hmm.
whether it's UGSERP intern, whether it's council, whether it's, you know, traveling, HTCC competition, and doing all these different things, you put your hand up and you're...
I go for it.
You do. And so you've learned to be really productive and to be working a lot. Yeah. And that's great.
I've also learned that I need to say no. And that's a bigger lesson that I think I've learned.
God, that's so good to hear. You've learned that?
Yeah.
Good.
I learned it the hard way, but I had to learn it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's definitely something.
And that's key.
Yeah.
And there is a relationship between our health, our mental health, and our productivity, and our quality of our work.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, we talked about that relationship between quality of work and profitability in a business. So, you know, ultimately it comes down to the healthier and happier people that we have, whether they're students or employees, the better everything is going to be.
Yeah.
And it's not... Sounds easy. It sounds easy.
It sounds easy, but it's really not.
It's not, no.
Well, that kind of wraps up today's podcast. I'd like to thank you for being here, Bruce. It was a great conversation that we had here today.
It was fun.
Yeah,
I'm actually
fun.
A little disappointed it's over. I'm going to have to go back and do some real work now.